women's health activists were meeting in a small little room that was usually locked when we got there in the morning, and we'd have to stand around in the hall waiting for someone to bring a key. I just want to give you the feel of what it was like. And we would squeeze into this little room and sit around a little table. And always a staffer from Senator Barbara Mikulski's office would come. Sometimes other staffers would come. And we would strategize about how can we make the words of this legislation lift up women's health services to equity. Equity on gender. That's no news to anyone in this room that they've been unequal, but also equity on class. And in a funny kind of way, we were explicitly trying to get middle-class women to have one of the rare benefits that working and poor women, working class and poor women had that they didn't. So in the Medicaid program, by law, it has to cover contraception, it has to cover all methods of contraception that have been approved by the FDA, and it has to cover with no copays. Any of you got insurance like that? I don't. I got great insurance, relatively speaking. I don't have that. That's what we wanted to get. We talked about it explicitly, and we talked about how can we do it. So thank the Lord, I am not a legislative language writer. I couldn't tell you to this day what that language says exactly, but there were people in the room who could craft it. They figured it out. They also figured out, using this sort of inside-outside strategy, that we didn't want to offer another opportunity to be kicked, slapped, and ground under the heels of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. So we called this, we didn't put it in the language of the bill, we made it an amendment, and we called it the Women's Health Amendment. And that's where Senator Barbara, the fighting senator, was a great person to be our champion, because she has brought many women's health issues to the floor of the Senate. And, you know, in that kind of sexist, ageist way, I think some of the guys just turn her off. They think, oh, there she goes again. Oh, research on women's health. Oh, women's health. Oh, women's health. So they sort of didn't, the ones who would have wanted to stop this didn't get it. So it got included. It got passed. It directed the Women's Health Amendment, the administration, to establish a list of women's health preventive services to treat us equally with children and other adults. It in a very nicely worded way, said there are great systems at CDC and U.S. Preventive Health Services Task Force to assess what is proven beneficial, but women have been not quite taken, our needs haven't been given their full due. So that's what we got through our inside-outside strategy. In August of 2010, Kathleen Sebelius put out the list to insurers of, here's everything from CDC and U.S. Preventive Health Service Task Force, and since they don't have enough on women, we'll ask the Institute of Medicine to study the science. So that's when we switched back to the outside strategy. And this is just a quick series of pictures that any of you will recognize. Here we have people signing petitions. Here we have people canvassing on the streets. Here we have people canvassing, I think this was at a farmer's market. Here we have our organizers from Philadelphia, Latasha Mays and one of her coworkers, with the fans. It's summertime now. This is Valentine's Day. We have a great e-alert system, which is why that sign-up sheet is going around, because if you're not on it, we'd like to add you to it. So, and we just used any kind of clever, low-cost, reach-as-many-people strategy as possible. This is a presentation at a community event about healthcare reform. This is a big rally in downtown D.C. when Congress tried to attack Planned Parenthood's funding. This is at a Black Women's Town Hall that the Imperative sponsored. And this is how we launched the campaign. So August, Secretary Sebelius says, insurers, you got to include what CDC and Preventive Task Force says you have to include. And by the way, we'll see what we do about women. So we knew it's going to take us, we're going to have to fight. We created a pathway for them, but they're not going to walk that path unless they feel our force behind them. So we campaigned all year long, and August 1, Thank you, HHS. They did it. And not only did we get the class and gender equity of including contraception as one of the services that insurers have to reduce barriers, so no extra fee, no copay, no deductible, just like kids' vaccinations and I was about to say old people's colonoscopies, but I'm in that age range. So thank you. Now, the one thing I will say that was sort of an unintended and fantastic consequence is that in the states, where the states have to say, what does it take? What do you have to give to be in, what do you have to provide? How good do you have to be as an insurer to be in our state exchange? They're going to have to follow some federal guidelines, and they're going to have to create some of their own guidelines. But we got this in through Sideways. We will now finish the fight that started with Viagra, when Viagra was covered automatically as a prescription drug, leaving women to say, excuse me, that penis is coming over here. Viagra is paid for. Why aren't you paying for my drugs? We got a long way. Many states do require contraceptive coverage, but this finishes the job. So that's that. Didn't I get the fun talk to give? So that is a story of how we took our both our policy advocacy smarts, how do you work an inside strategy, and our class and justice analysis, and made a nice step forward, even in the context of getting slapped around and losing on other parts of reproductive health issues. So thank you, HHS.